sports world keeps on turning. That's why we bring you Saturday Sports Talk. Kick your weekend off with the week's top headlines in sports. Get in the game by calling 656-9900 or toll free at 1-866-656-9900. Star 99 is a free call for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. This is Saturday Sports Talk. Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Good Saturday morning. It is Saturday Sports Talk on FM 99.1, The Sports Animal, AM 990, online at 991thesportsanimal.com, and of course, the Sports Animal app, powered by Big Kahuna Wings, the wings that changed it all. I'm Joel Silverberg alongside Eric Kane. Logan Ward, our producer this morning from the Budweiser Studios of Cumulus Broadcasting. And it is 7 days until football time in Tennessee. You can use whatever number seven you want to throw out there. Casey Clawson, Rick Clawson for a while after he changed his number, Brent Schaefer, Preston Williams. I'm sure fans want to forget about that one.
It's hard to believe that, it really is just a week away.
It's wild. It's a wild time. In the words of Lane Kiffin, what an exciting time. But no, we are 7 days away from football time in Tennessee. Of course, the Vols will actually be in South Carolina, but Tennessee football will be happening next Saturday night at 7:30. Our game day coverage will start at 8 o'clock, so you can hear Eric and I from 8 to 10, and then you'll have the rest of our game day coverage. Bobby Scott, former number 10, was in here earlier this week, wanting to check in and say hey and see how things were going as he's getting ready to be a part of our broadcast team again for the upcoming season. So it's good to see Bobby Scott in the house.
The station's all-time QB.
There you go. the Sports Animal's all-time QB, and he didn't throw that interception against LSU.
The only number 10 we recognize.
Yes.
That's what Will West always says. I love it. No, it's hard to believe, though, because, I mean, for so long it was, are we ever going to get to this point? Are we ever going to get to this point? And, I mean, even when the SEC came out and announced its plans, announced its schedule, I mean, it was still kind of in the back of your mind, like, okay, well, that's nice, but are we going to get to that point? And still, 7 days away, there's a little something in the back of the mind saying, okay, are we? It's kind of like with high school football, not going to believe until you're out there on the field and they kick it off. But no, it's exciting. I mean, 5 weeks of camp, it's been an unusual camp. It's been more like spring practice, but here we are. We've got other college football games that have been underway. The ACC got kicked off last week, and Big 12 had some games, and they're going to be at it again today, and the Big Ten's made plans to come back at the end of October. So it's exciting. It's an exciting time.
And there's been a handful of games that have been postponed, unfortunately, with North Carolina and Charlotte being canceled. Army and BYU, which would have been a ranked matchup, has been postponed. Houston-Baylor, which was a matchup I think a lot of people were looking forward to, that's been postponed. Florida Atlantic and Georgia Southern is not happening, and neither is Central Arkansas and Arkansas State. The one ranked matchup that you have this weekend is tonight at 7:30. That's the ABC game with Miami at Louisville. And other games of intrigue, you're right. The ACC getting back in action. You've got Pitt taking on Syracuse. You have Boston College at Duke. Notre Dame is hosting South Florida. UCF is at Georgia Tech. Got a handful of games. Wake Forest is at NC State. In the Big 12, you've got Oklahoma State hosting Tulsa. So getting to see the mullet in action tonight, it's exciting stuff. It's good to have college football back. It does feel a little weird that we've got Power 5 games happening, and maybe it'll hit a little bit more when we get the SEC back next week, start getting back into some of these bigger matchups. And I think it's just good to have Tennessee football back. And there are games being postponed by the day, and I don't know if the SEC is going to have this flawless schedule where everything goes according to plan, but Tennessee has done its part, even though it's had players miss practice. It's quarantining guys. It's following all the protocols. They've been pretty strict over there, trying to make sure that they can play next Saturday. And it's good to see. It's really good to see. And we're as we said already, 7 days away until it's football time in Tennessee. The Big Ten has announced that it's coming back. The Pac-12 met yesterday to discuss the possibility of coming back. No vote was officially made, so they are going to discuss it this weekend about when the Pac-12 can return to play. And they did clear one major hurdle with the governors in California and Oregon saying that schools can begin contact practices and competition. So that's nice to know. You got that those two big hurdles. And that's what we've been saying for a while, is the Pac-12's reason for postponing its season has been a little bit different because they've had more hotspots within their geographic footprint within the conference. Now you've got the wildfires. The air quality has been a concern. So California and Oregon have given the AOK, which affects six of your schools. And Washington was a hotspot for a long time, so that affected two more of your schools. And so now you've got a couple of hurdles cleared. It's just a matter of what does the league decide to do. The Big Ten announcing that it's going to start an eight-game season in 8 weeks without an open date beginning in October. So it sounds like at the very least, this time next month, we're going to be talking about four Power Five conferences plus the American Athletic Conference all being in action.
It's good to see. And if the Pac-12 does not return by Halloween, there's absolutely no... I mean, the Big Ten, you know, backed itself into a corner where it couldn't go any further. You know, really, because, I mean, that's 8 weeks, eight games in 8 weeks with no bye week, finishing the day before Selection Sunday. And so if you want to have any hope of being part of the college football playoff, you can't start after the 24th. However, maybe that's not the motive for the Pac-12. Maybe the Pac-12 just wants to get back on the field and play, you know, play some games. And so, you know, if that's the case, then absolutely that's fine. But, you know, for the Big Ten, who has legitimate chances of making the college football playoff, it, you know, it waited about as long as it possibly could. But nonetheless, to your point, it's going to be exciting to hopefully this time next month, we're going to be nearing having all Power Five conferences in action, and college football will seem a little bit normal. But you're right, there's going to be postponements. I mean, we're already seeing postponements a little bit already. There's going to be teams that are hit with contact tracing to where they don't have enough offensive linemen, like Charlotte. If Tennessee had a game 2 weeks ago, Tennessee probably wouldn't play. You know, Tennessee was supposed to kick off the season September 5th against Charlotte. Tennessee might not have played that day because, had upwards of 44 to 50 players that were out of practice. And so it's a unique season. It's a weird season. But the good news for Tennessee, good news from Jeremy Pruitt on Thursday, that if the season started today, his entire two deep would be available to go, which is tremendous progress from where that roster has been the last 2 or 3 weeks.
And he said a couple weeks ago, with the amount of guys they had out, we were originally scheduled to play today. And if we had played today, I don't know if we would have beaten anybody.
Yeah.
And that might be a little strong on Pruitt's part, but really just referring to how important the process has been to get these guys back into playing shape, to get everybody through testing protocols and all of that. And you're right, contact tracing could really affect some odd results in the SEC. Jesse Smithy said that right before week five of the high school football season started. He said so many teams have been hit that you're going to see some really puzzling box scores by the end of the night. Bearden was only down by a touchdown to Maryville at halftime last night. You saw, and for the most part, I think in a lot of ways you got shocked. You saw Farragut beat up on Morristown West.
But then you saw Fulton, who had a bunch of guys that were out, just demolish Carnes. And so, you know, good for Fulton.
And at the end of the day, though, Fulton's used to that.
Yeah.
You're like,
yeah.
Oh, we beat Carnes by 40? Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Here
the last 2 years, not so much. But, yeah, to your point, you're right. The box scores might look a little weird because you'll have some of your players that are not being able to suit up that night. Again, you know, football, as long as you do the right things, as long as football can happen, no one's going to complain, at least for this season.
And you mentioned the threshold of the college football playoff for the Big Ten. That's actually one question that we want to ask on the show today. And again, you can check out at Joel Silverbring on Twitter, at Sports Radio WNML. You can find the poll question there. If the Big Ten does pull off an eight-game season in 8 weeks, should the Big Ten champion get a spot in the college football playoff above other Power Five schools that complete a 10-game season? So be sure to check that out. and cast your vote there or let us know at 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900 outside the local calling area. Star 990, a free call for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. You mentioned the contact tracing. The SEC did release its parameters for COVID-19 and game postponements and things of that nature. It's very similar to what we've seen from other conferences. The SEC has established minimum thresholds of at least 53 scholarship players available to participate in the following minimum number of position scholarship players available to begin a game. 7 offensive linemen, which includes 1 center, a quarterback, and 4 defensive linemen. The impacted institution still has the option to play the game with fewer than 53 scholarship players or fewer than the minimum number of those positions that I just listed if it chooses to do so. So a school is not required to cancel a game, but what you've seen already from some of these games, like in the Houston Baylor game, that a school falls beneath the threshold of one of those position requirements and decides we're not going to play. We're not going to take the risk of guys getting hurt and us being just decimated for the rest of the season. We're just not going to play this game. So the conferences, for the most part, obviously the Big Ten hasn't been able to do this, but conferences have implemented the option to flex their conference championships back a week. There's a couple of open dates in there where you can try to reschedule a game. So conferences are trying to figure out how they can do this if this happens where you have to postpone a game and still get your full season in. It's going to be very different, I think, by the end of the year when we're trying to figure out division champions, conference champions. We may not get the results that we're all expecting, which is why I'm kind of excited. We made picks on the roundtable earlier this week on Tuesday, and now we've already got to change them potentially because after the roundtable, the Big Ten decides, yeah, we're playing in October. And an 8-0 Big Ten champion, could they get in over a 2-loss SEC runner-up? A lot of people think they shouldn't, but the committee might decide that they deserve to be there.
If Ohio State goes 8-0, wins the Big Ten championship 9-0, beat some quality teams like they'll play in the Big Ten, there's no way Ohio State's not getting the college football playoff.
Yeah, they're going to make sure that Ohio State plays their division opponents. Yes. They're going to make sure that Ohio State plays Michigan. They're not going to be like, oh, let's have Ohio State play Rutgers, Northwestern,
because
and Indiana.
Because again, that slate might not be impressive enough to warrant a spot in the college football playoff. So you're right. Ohio State's going to have to beat some teams. You're going to have to play Michigan. You're going to have to play Penn State. You're going to have to play some, you know, maybe a Wisconsin. There's going to be, what, two cross-divisional games? No, say there's one, and then
permanent cross-division rival in the Big Ten.
But then they're going to play another one on the championship Saturday for the teams that aren't playing in the Big Ten championship.
They're going to have the second-place teams in each division play each other, and then so on, the third, the fourth. And the release also mentioned the possibility where they could change some of those matchups if they want to avoid rematches. So if the two six-team teams have already played against each other, sixth-place teams have already played against each other, they might flex that. Okay, well, the sixth from the east is going to play the seventh from the west.
At that point, who really cares because that mean anything? But, so without a doubt, Ohio State's going to be tested. Penn State's going to be tested. Wisconsin, all the tier one teams or the tier one, tier two teams will have a schedule to where if you go 8-0 and then win the championship, 100% you'll qualify to be in the college football playoff, in my opinion. Now, again, though, the Big Ten, it has no wiggle room. I mean, 8 games in 8 weeks. Championship Saturday is a day before Selection Sunday. You're not moving Selection Sunday. At least there's been no talk about it right now. So if a team has to cancel, if a team has to postpone, there's not a bye week to where you can reschedule. It's tough. But still, the Big Ten's given an opportunity to go play, and that's what's important.
Does a team try to, especially if it's a team like Ohio State or Michigan that could be battling for a college football playoff spot, do you see a team try to reschedule a midweek game and have a team play 2 games in a week?
I don't know if that's...
I don't think that's safe, but do you see a team try to pull off a Saturday and then a Thursday the following week?
Yeah, like, I don't know if it's not against the law, but like, I feel like that shouldn't be a... Okay, so if you play a Saturday and then play a Thursday and then you're off and you don't play that Saturday, is that what you're saying? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the NFL does it, obviously, but they play Sunday.
And Richard Sherman calls it a poop fest.
Yeah. I don't think I could see that because that is these are technically right now still amateur athletes, and that's probably not smart. But could we see – I thought you were going to go this way. I mean, could we see – teams start to bend the rules a little bit and try to, you know, try to maybe fudge the numbers in order to stay out there and continue on in terms of contact tracing, positive tests, and all that. I've said no the entire time because I feel like this thing is so big and there's lawsuits and firings and all that that can come with it that a coach doesn't even want to even think about that. But stakes are high right now, especially in the Big Ten when you don't have a lot of wiggle room. Could there be some coaches that maybe try to bend the rules a little bit? I don't know.
I think you'll see teams more willing to compete if they don't meet the minimum number of scholarship players required at a certain position group. So say a team only has 6 offensive linemen and you're late in the season. Now at that point, maybe you justify it a little bit more. Like, we still have a starting offensive line. We're going to trot these guys out there. The season's basically over after this week anyway. And if we make the college football playoff, then we have a couple of weeks to get guys healed up and quarantine and get them ready for it. So if we get later in the season and a team falls below the numbers, maybe you don't see them fudge the numbers a little bit, but maybe you see them more willing to go out there with fewer players than they need.
Yeah. I know this is not relatable. I mean, it is somewhat, but the Tennessee Titans had 3 outside linebackers in Denver last week on Monday night. Only 3, and one of them was a brand new player that had been at practice for 6 days, Jadeveon Clowney. So you had a couple of guys who were on the COVID list. You had a couple of guys who were injured. So you very well might see some position groups that don't have hardly any players, and you're seeing guys play just so many snaps, whereas normally they'd be, you know, rotating in and out because half the room is hit with contact tracing. It's just going to be a weird year. I mean, it's going to be a super, super weird year.
And I don't know what to expect from it, because last week we were discussing the possibility of 2 SEC teams getting into the playoff versus, does an American Athletic Conference team finally buck the trend? And that was the conversation I had with Will West on Tuesday night on our roundtable. Now it's, okay, well, does a 9-0 Big Ten team get in over an SEC runner-up that won 10 games? And whether it will happen or not, whether it should happen or not, those are questions we're now trying to answer. The American Athletic Conference, meanwhile, is like, gosh dang it. See, and this was the possibility I threw out, and this was just meant to be funny. I do not see this happening. So full disclaimer, I am not advocating that this will actually happen. But how hilarious would it be if Cincinnati went undefeated as the American Athletic Conference champion and got into the playoff as the number 4 seed over Ohio State, which is just 100 miles away, all because the Big Ten delayed its football season? Could you imagine? Just watch the fireworks of Buckeyes heads fans exploding all over the place.
That'd be fun. Sign me up for that.
See, I want to see, again, I realize that's not going to give us a really good semifinal in that 1-4 matchup. Granted, the 1-4 matchup is really never a good game, and it wasn't last year with LSU and Oklahoma. So if we're gonna have a blowout in one of the college football semifinals like we do every year, why not at least have some fun in setting it up just to make Ohio State fans angry?
Yeah,
Now, granted, that means fewer people are going to watch the game, but still, it's more fun for the fans.
Chaos is fun, so sign me up for chaos. What do you got? I mean, what do you guys think? Do you think an 8-0, well, really a 9-0 Big Ten champion will qualify for the college football playoff? Because I think without a doubt, 100% yes.
I think the committee is going to put them in, especially because the scenarios that we've thrown out with the SEC, some people think Florida's going to win the East. Some people think Georgia's going to win the East. Like, the scenario I threw out earlier this week was Florida wins the East, but Georgia beats Florida. And then, because Georgia's got the tougher schedule, they have to play Alabama and Auburn.
Yeah.
Florida gets to play an LSU team that doesn't have Joe Burrow or Ja'Marr Chase. So, as well as a handful of other starters that are now in the NFL or have opted out. So I threw out the scenario where Florida makes the SEC championship game, loses to Alabama. So you've got Alabama that has now beaten both Florida and Georgia. Well, does the committee really want to put at that point would be 2 2-loss SEC teams that have both already lost to Alabama? So you really want to potentially see another rematch? Or do you want to throw out Ohio State, which is a big brand, which has gotten the benefit of the doubt in the past, just like Alabama has? And that will likely, if it goes undefeated, that means you're talking about wins over Michigan, Michigan State, Penn State, and probably either Minnesota or Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship game. And maybe another one of those teams, depending on how the whole schedule shakes out. Yeah. Yeah, you're going to put that team in. You're going to put a 9-0 team in over a 9-2 team.
Yeah. I think so, too. What do you think, Logan?
I think the only question that, you know, this would really be a conversation, yes. I believe under that scenario, if, say, let's say Florida or Georgia, whoever comes in second out of the East, if they have two losses, now let's say Florida or Georgia meets up with Alabama and both of those teams sit at 10-0. That's the only question I think that would come into, because you're talking about a 9-1 Florida team with wins over Texas A&M, LSU, Tennessee, Kentucky, all teams ranked inside the top 20, and then a Georgia team with wins over Auburn as well, and Florida, I would assume. Teams ranked inside the top 12. That's the only question. Now, that'd be a hard resume to beat. Now, the question still remains. You don't win your conference. You don't even win your division like we saw with Alabama a couple years ago. But, you know, I would say yes if the runner-up in the SEC has more than one loss. I would say yes, that happens. But if they have one loss, I think there's a serious conversation to be had.
I thought it was a foregone conclusion that you were going to get two SEC teams in the college football playoff.
Same.
But then with the Big Ten returning, I've almost scrapped that. I mean, of course, it's still possible, but I've almost scrapped that completely, because you're going to get an undefeated team from the Big Ten. You just are. If it's not Ohio State, it's going to be Penn State. You know, if it's not, when you're one of the, what about from the other division over there? Well, I mean, is it Wisconsin or Minnesota? You're going to get an undefeated team from the Big Ten. So yeah, of course you could still get two teams from the SEC in there. I mean, it's happened before in a normal year, but I think the chances of that considerably went down with the return of the Big Ten, because Tyler Robbins does not believe that the Big Ten, if you have an undefeated Big Ten team, they're going to be in the college football playoff. He says play the same amount of games as everybody else. But everyone else I've kind of talked to believes that, yeah, 9-0, 100% you're getting in.
Well, we already have an imperfect system with that, though, where we have some conferences that play an 8-game schedule, yep. Some conferences that play a 9-game schedule. Now, mm-hmm. The Pac-12 gets criticized for that because they usually take an extra loss somewhere along the line that keeps them out of the playoff, which is what happened to Oregon last year. Oregon loses to Arizona State, and so they have 8 conference yep. wins, just like all the other power conference teams. Then they go on to win the Pac-12, but because of those losses to Auburn and Arizona State, they are left out of the playoff. So you could say play the same number of games as everybody else, but when you're talking about a conference that's deep like the Big Ten, why is Ohio State significantly less impressive at 9-0 in the Big Ten than Clemson will be at 11-0 in the ACC?
100%, yeah.
We know which conference is far superior. But again, it's the conversation that Logan and I had last week while Eric was officiating a high school push-up contest in Arkansas. Congrats to Pushy McPusherson. Pusherson, by the way, about how you don't have the analytical data of being able to compare conferences when you don't have Power 5 non-conference games. Because we know sitting here that the SEC is the far superior conference in college football. But how can we suddenly go from all these Big Ten teams? Because remember, there was a handful of Big Ten teams that were ranked in the AP preseason poll. Now we're here in week 3 and none of them are in the poll because they're not playing football. But when you go back to the preseason poll, Ohio State's number 2, Penn State's number 7, Wisconsin's number 12, Michigan's number 16, Minnesota's number 19, Iowa's number 24. So you have all these Big Ten teams that are hanging around in the top 25 poll in the preseason. So once they start playing again, since they're only playing each other, how do you rank them? And Logan brought up how you've got all these top 20 teams in the SEC, but once they start playing each other, they're all going to start taking losses. So do they stay ranked in the top 20? Louisiana's the 19th ranked team in the country right now.
No.
Pretty good Louisiana team, though.
Are they really a top 20 team in college football?
No.
And if the Pac-12 was playing football right now, you would have a couple teams that would be considered in the top 20. You would have probably Oregon and Utah and USC that would be in that conversation. But we don't have that this year. So when these teams start taking losses, especially in the SEC West, one of those top 4 teams, those big hitters that are starting the season in the top 15, LSU, Alabama, Auburn, Texas A&M, one of them is probably going to have 4 losses by the end of the year. 6-4, that doesn't look good. That's one game above 500. Mm-hmm. But that's one game away from being a 500 team. But that doesn't look like a top 15 team. You could play like a top 15 team this year and not be ranked in the top 15. So how are the metrics going to be analyzed from the number of losses you have because the veracity in the schedule, the strength of schedule of the teams that you play versus, well, based on the eye test, we know that this team is better than this team. So I guess what I'm asking is, how much of a ratio is there going to be for the playoff committee between conference prestige and your actual resume?
Yeah, and you know, that's why they're on the committee and I'm not. And that's why they're going to meet once a week for the, you know, for the next 8 weeks and I'm not. You got to take all those things in consideration as well. There's no non-conference games this year. There's none of those those Oregon Auburn matchups that you can kind of base some things off of. So it's an interesting conversation for sure. But again, it's a conversation that I think is welcome to have, that we can have. That means college football playoff is back. College football is back. And we have the majority of the Power Fives coming to play football. So it's going to be exciting. This is a fun conversation, obviously. Did you think the Big Ten was coming back?
No.
I did not either.
When we heard the conversation about them happening in October, and Austin Ward was telling Sports 180, well, there's some discussion about coming back October 10th. Okay, well, you can fit a 9-game schedule in there. An 8-game schedule, maybe a 10-game schedule if you work quickly enough. But now it's October 24th, and so I was thinking there's no way they could start now. I didn't think the Thanksgiving thing was happening. I was like, what would be the point of that? What would you accomplish? Yeah. Ohio State would be 3-0 trying to claim it deserves to be in the college football playoff.
Yep.
So I did not think it was going to happen, because I thought at that point it's too late. Then you're going to be stuck in no man's land. I don't think anybody's really going to be paying attention as much to the Big Ten. That wouldn't be good for the conference, because, hey, Ohio State's playing Michigan. Okay, for what?
Yeah.
Like, the rest of us are playing for college football playoff spots. Like, we're going to win a national championship. You're going to be alone. And so I did not think it was going to be coming back. Now I think there's real intrigue that if those teams can follow protocols and avoid contact tracing and somehow stay healthy, at least the big dogs in the conference, then there's a chance that the Big Ten can enter the college football playoff conversation.
Yeah, same here. I didn't think there was a chance. Didn't think there was a chance at all they were going to come back. I thought that, you know, they kind of started this trend. We're hoping that the other Power Fives would follow. The Pac-12 went off with them. The other three stayed the course and tried to figure it out. And, two of the three, meaning the Big 12 and ACC, had already started their season, with the SEC soon to follow. Get credit to the Big Ten for addressing it, trying to come back and figuring out the procedures to come back. I just didn't think it was going to happen. But you're right. I mean, I never bought into the whole Thanksgiving thing. I never bought into winter football starting. And I know we might see some conferences in Division I play, February schedule, February through May or whatever it is. That's just not believable to me. That's not football. And I certainly didn't think I'd see a team like Ohio State and Penn State playing in early March. It just made no sense to me. But I didn't think it was going to happen, but I'm glad I'm wrong. I'm glad the Big Ten is coming back, and because that just makes college football better. It makes the product better. You get your better teams, your better players. Sean Wade off the back end of the season. That's awesome. He's one of the best players in the country. That is so cool. And again, I asked it on Five Burning Questions yesterday morning. If I'm Ohio State, if I'm the Ohio State, players in that locker room, am I cool with Sean Wade just coming back in? Yes. It's a pandemic year. He's a top 10 pick. He was not going to play in the spring. He was going to opt out. But since there's a chance to win a championship now, coming back and playing somewhat of a normal season in the fall, absolutely come back. I mean, that's, college football this year, as Jeremy Pruitt said, it's a year of a mulligan, essentially. Everybody should get a free pass this year, because it is what it is. It's the pandemic. And so I am glad that the Big Ten is back, and I'm glad that there'll be some teams from the Big Ten that will be pushing for a college football playoff spot.
And somebody that overcame one major hurdle to get a free pass for the upcoming season is Cade Mays. He still needs to hear from the SEC, but the NCAA has granted his waiver to transfer and be eligible immediately after he transferred to Tennessee from Georgia back in January. Should the Big Ten get into the college football playoff if its champion is undefeated above a Power 5 school that completed a 10-game season? 656-9900 with Eric Kane. I'm Joel Silverberg. Logan Ward, our producer this morning from the Budweiser Studios of Cumulus Broadcasting. This is Saturday Sports Talk on FM 99.1, the sports animal. And I think Logan Ward wants somebody to talk dirty to him. He's playing the same song every break.
It's not my fault.
Big fan of this song.
Whatever, man. All right, 656-9900. As we continue to talk college football, we are 1 week away from football time in Tennessee, and Cody joins us now this morning. Cody, good morning. You're on Saturday Sports Talk.
Morning, guys. You know, you guys were talking a little earlier about this year being a mulligan year, and I agree 100%. But what are they going to do with roster limits, and how is that going to work, especially for a team like UT that really doesn't have a ton of upper-tier talent, you know, at the senior position or the junior position to maybe leave early for the draft? And you got Trey, obviously, and maybe a couple D linemen, but that's a stretch probably. You know, we've got a pretty good-sized class coming in. What do you see, or who do you see kind of getting, I guess, rotated off that roster in order to make room for that class while still kind of, you know, keeping it as a quote-unquote mulligan year? How do you guys think that's going to work?
As far as how the numbers will work out with scholarships and all that, I don't really have an answer to that right now. I know that kind of like with the spring sports, to where, you know, those spring athletes were given the opportunity to come back if you want
to. They're going to make adjustments.
Yeah, make some adjustments, but the team can decide whether the scholarship's honored and all that. There's just conversations to be had to answer your question. Now, some of these players that have the opportunity to leave, some of these players that would have the opportunity to come back and take advantage of that might not. Darrell Middleton came out earlier this week and said he will. That's just one, but there are, I think, five or six defensive linemen that are set to graduate this year. Not all of those guys are going to come back, in my opinion, but we'll just have to see. But I think there are conversations to be had to see how all that's going to work out, whether that's at the NCAA level, if that's at the SEC level, or if they just leave it up to the school in terms of how they want to make that work. Could we see an increase in some scholarships potentially? I don't know. Those are some conversations to have, and I don't think that there are answers to that just yet. But I do know this. I mean, Jeremy Pruitt, they're going to continue to bring in the same amount of guys that they do every single year. 25 usually around that. You know, each recruiting class. That's not going to change. But there might be an increase in scholarships for, you know, say the next year or two to kind of, you know, apply for these guys for this pandemic year.
Well, and Cody, I think one thing is that if the NCAA does leave it up to the schools, you're going to have some schools say,
thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah, thanks, but no thanks. Wisconsin has already done that for its spring sport athletes. They were one of the first big schools to say, we're not going to allow our seniors to come back if their eligibility is exhausted. So we're not going to have them back. You're going to have student athletes that say, hey, I'm ready to move on to the next chapter of my life.
That's how I was in college. I was like, man, I spent 4 years here. I'm good. We'll see you later. Had fun. Just time to move on, especially too. Like,
if you redshirted your freshman year for those.
Yeah, yeah. So I had another year of eligibility left, but I mean, I was, you know, just time to move on, get on with life. If you're an NFL prospect,
and then you stayed at school anyway,
and then I stayed at school anyway and did something else. If you stay, if you're an NFL prospect, then you're not going to stay. If you are, you know, sometimes you might want to stay and increase your stock, but then again, there's another year off. You know, your football expectancy. And so that's going to hurt you. So, you know, Darrell Middleton's a guy that, I mean, if he really improves, maybe he can have an NFL career, but not really an NFL prospect right now. So maybe he just wants to come back and play, and that's awesome. So I think that you're going to see some guys that will kind of teeter that line and saying, well, hey, I'm not going to play in the NFL. I just love football. I want to do it again. So I'm going to come back. I love being a part of this program. I'm going to come back. But I do think that most will be thanks, no thanks, time to move on. Well, you know, we'll see.
Brandon Kennedy going to be a seventh-year senior getting his PhD?
I don't know why, for the first time yesterday, I thought about that. I mean, I've known about this. It's a free year of eligibility, but I don't know why I never considered, oh, that applies to Brandon Kennedy, too. He's already a sixth year. Could we see him be a seventh-year senior?
Well, I mean, I've heard that Brandon Kennedy is like a really smart guy, so if he's thinking, man, I could get a PhD for free? Yes, please. Now, credit to anybody that can complete a PhD, a doctorate degree, while playing SEC football. Yeah. But yeah, that has been something.
I'm pretty sure he's working on his third degree right now. He broke it down for us a couple weeks ago when he met with us. I'm pretty sure he's working on his third degree right now. He's already got a degree in sports psychology. But yeah, I mean, that would be truly insane. I'm rooting for that. You talk about college football and chaos. Give me a seventh year, Brandon Kennedy.
You do not need to be playing college football as long as it takes for you to pass Hogwarts. It just does not need to be happening. But other factors that will play in with in a normal year, pre-COVID, remember that era? You've got players that decide to transfer if they feel like they're too far down the depth chart. So you're going to have guys transfer.
Yeah.
I think you're going to have more players at maybe even group of five schools. If you have all these scholarship numbers piling up, you're going to have players from Group of Five schools wanting to transfer to Power Conference schools if they believe they can move up. You're going to have some guys transfer down to FCS schools so that they can play. And so you're going to have guys just want to leave schools. You're going to have a bit of a carousel, and you're going to have players being willing to sit out a year for transferring. So you are the usual things that cause attrition within football programs. I think those things are going to continue to happen, but I would imagine that you're going to have some schools, if the option's given to them, that will say, thanks, but no thanks. We're, you know, we've got to make room, and the school themselves may decide, look, we can't afford to pay all these extra scholarships. And, like, I mean, we've got to move on.
That's a conversation to have as well. And I know it's easy sitting from, you know, where we are, you know, as fans to say, oh, shame on the school. Shame, shame, shame on the school. You got to find a way to. And that is a conversation to have, too. But put yourself in the other, you know, the other person's shoes. It's a difficult decision to be in for a head coach, an athletics director, to try to finagle all that, too, because you've been prepping, you've been recruiting, you've been building your program to run like normal. You throw a wrench into this, it's there's just not enough scholarships. I mean, especially if there's not an increase in scholarship, or if there's not enough of an increase in scholarship. And there's been no talk of that so far right now. I think there will be conversation about it, but even if there is, I don't think it's going to be anything significant. Because, again, this is hopefully, fingers crossed, just a one-year thing. This is not the new norm. I hope not. And so this isn't going to be a thing for 4 or 5 years down the line. So it's a little bit of confusion, but I it'll be interesting to see how school, you know, school A in the SEC goes about it, you know, whereas school B in the SEC and school C in the ACC.
Well, look at Tennessee's tight end situation. You're talking about Austin Pope, who continuing to deal with his back issues. It does not appear that he's going to play next Saturday against South Carolina. The thought was is that, originally, that man, it looks like he's going to miss this entire season. Then, oh, he might be back for the opener. And now I think we're meeting somewhere in the middle.
Jeremy Pruitt straight up made it sound like, I mean, this was early on in camp, but he made it sound like, oh, yeah, he'd be available for sure. I think he was just optimistic about how well he's progressing. But I agree. I think it's going to be somewhere in the middle.
And so we might see Austin this year, but if he's not developing the way he wants to, then in a normal year, he might be able to get a medical red shirt and come back next season. But the tight end position is one that has been kind of suspect for Tennessee. Like, can they find somebody that can fill that void? Okay, well, you've got three guys coming in this recruiting class to fill that spot for next season. So if all of these current tight ends at Tennessee are given the opportunity to come back, are all of them really going to come back to Tennessee with three new recruits at the tight end spot coming in? I don't think so. And I think you're going to see some recruits decide, man, my position group is backed up, and all these guys that I thought, hey, they're going to be at least a couple years ahead of me and in terms of eligibility, so I'll have a chance to move up. Well, now that's not necessarily the case anymore. I don't know if I want to go there. I think the depth chart's too crowded. So you're going to see recruits change their path. You're going to see current players change their path. You're going to see some guys move on, some guys stay. It's going to be all over the place. But Cody, we appreciate the call. Have a great weekend and enjoy the fourth week. Hard to believe that we're this far into it, but the fourth week of the college football season, second full weekend with Power 5 teams. 656-9900 if you want to join us talking college football and more with Eric Kane. I'm Joel Silverberg here on Saturday Sports Talk FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. Okay, so Logan plays the bump song and then asks, is this a different song? Like, how can you not tell the difference between
there
two
was a
songs?
A lot of time, but you know, before this bumper playing right now and the last one, so I don't know. This is probably about 20 minutes.
Do you even listen to music?
No.
Okay.
More than I used to.
Yeah, whatever. 656-9900. If you want to talk to us, Star 990 is a free call for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. So, Tennessee's offensive line, Kaner, I think, is obviously a big focus for Tennessee. I mean, it is in college football in general. The offensive line, one of the most important position groups that you could have. But the conversation throughout the entire offseason with Cade Mays deciding that he was going to transfer to Tennessee, then Trey Smith deciding, hey, I'm coming back, has led many to believe that Tennessee could have one of the best offensive lines in the country. Cole Kubelik of the SEC Network said that yesterday. He believes that Tennessee's position group as a whole could be one of the best offensive lines in college football. There is an award for that, by the way, that is given. You know, obviously we have the Remington Trophy and different awards that are given to the best offensive lineman, the best center in college football, but there is an award that is actually given to the best offensive line unit in college football. And Kentucky, by the way, has been a finalist for that award twice in the last 4 years. And they've got four starters coming back this year. Kentucky's going to be really good in the trenches. Yeah. So for Tennessee, having Cade Mays get his transfer waiver approved by the NCAA, still waiting on the SEC. I cannot imagine a scenario where the SEC denies it. Could you imagine if the NCAA approved it and the SEC said no? In a year where nothing counts.
And that's the thing right there. This is a year. And again, the caller who just called in, kind of used the word mulligan year, and I think I did use it earlier. I don't want to say that nothing counts in the season, because certainly if Jeremy Pruitt goes out and wins four games this year, despite the season, fans are not going to be happy. So it's not just like throwing it out the window. But with the year of 2020, the pandemic year, the odd scheduling, the eligibility, whereas it doesn't even matter, it's out the window. I think this year of any years is, that's more so a reason you're going to see Cade Mays get that granted from the SEC. Whereas if this was last year, maybe he wouldn't. Because, again, this is an undergraduate going from conference school to conference school. There's been a lot of red tape to, break through for graduate transfers from in conference to in conference. So it'd be tough. But I'm with you. I'm in no circumstance do I see this not passing from Greg Sankey. And Jeremy Pruitt has been playing the long game. This entire time he said nothing but great. I mean, not like he would go out and bash him anyway. But Jeremy Pruitt has been singing the praises of Greg Sankey for months now. And so he knew a long time ago that once you pass this hurdle, got to go through the SEC. And so Jeremy Pruitt has been talking up Greg Sankey for quite some time. Oh, yeah. So now's the time, Greg. Make your call. But to your point, yes, Tennessee's offensive line, it's just in terms of depth, in terms of quality of players, fantastic. Is it to the level of Kentucky right now? Not yet in terms of chemistry, because those guys have played a lot of football together, but certainly it can be right up there. I think that if these guys can stay out of quarantine, can continue to progress, stay healthy, this unit can be one of the best in the SEC along with Alabama and Kentucky, because you've got depth, you've got experience, you've got Trey Smith and Cade Mays who are just great, and you've got some quality guys that are coming along, as you hope, like Wanya Morris and Darnell Wright, and you've got Brandon Kennedy right there in the middle, and you've got so many, you've got Kayron Calvert, you've got Jerome Carvin, you've got guys right behind that you feel great about as well. So just, again, I always say, think about 2018 season, 2017 season, how you couldn't field an offensive line. Now you have all these guys that can play. Credit to Jeremy Pruitt, Will Friend, and Jim Chaney for building that through recruiting.
And, by the way, Greg Sankey has praised Tennessee in response, saying the way that they've handled the COVID-19 protocols, the way that they've handled everything, and scrapping the scrimmage from a couple weeks ago because of all the players out, making sure they get guys quarantined. He's applauded Tennessee's efforts in following the protocols the right way. I'm not saying that's going to make an impact on whether or not the SEC approves Cade Mays, but it could. You never know. Wanya Morris, who has apparently missed some time as a result of contact tracing. Has he tested positive for COVID-19? Is that known? Does it appear that it's just contact tracing at this point?
The only thing that's known is that he's been in quarantine twice and that he's only practiced. So Jeremy Pruitt said Thursday that Wanya practiced today for only the second time in 23 days.
Whoa. So what does that mean for the season opener next week, more than likely?
So in my opinion, and again, I've talked to some people, but this is just strictly my opinion. It'd be hard for me to believe that Wanya Morris will be ready to go to be on that starting unit Saturday in South Carolina. Now, Wanya Morris, if he's not in quarantine and everything and he's healthy, he'll suit up and make the trip and all that. I'm not saying that he won't play in the game. Jeremy Pruitt said we hope to get these guys, Aubrey Solomon, he was also throwing in there, Wanya Morris, some plays next Saturday. But when you've missed so much practice time, when you've missed camp time, when you've missed conditioning time, when you've missed all that stuff, it's just hard. It's hard pressed for me to believe that Wanya Morris would be physically ready to go out there and play 60, 70 snaps in a game. So I don't think you're going to see Wanya Morris play a whole lot on Saturday. Now, I think you're going to see Jameer Johnson step up and be that starting left tackle for Tennessee game one. If Jameer Johnson struggles, then you very well could see Wanya Morris come in because Tennessee will have a short leash with Jameer Johnson. But as far as just being ready to play football from a conditioning standpoint, from a development standpoint, I think it'd be hard to expect a lot from Wanya Morris game one. Now, Wanya is the guy they want to play. Wanya will be the starting left tackle. Don't hear me wrong, but it might not be game one. That's just, it'd be, again, two practices in 23 days. Man, that's not great.
Now, some may think to say, okay, well, Trey Smith was kind of able to do that last year where he wasn't really doing Wandy a whole
Morris
lot of contact
is not
practice.
Trey Smith.
And that would be my response. Not all five stars are the same.
Plus.
The only reason Trey Smith was a five star coming out of high school is because six stars don't exist.
Yeah, exactly. And plus, Trey was still at practice. Trey was still repping. He just wasn't doing live. Okay. Wandy Morris was in quarantine. So, I mean, that is a huge difference, too. So we'll just have to see. So, I mean, that offensive line could look very different game one. You want the line that you want, the line that Jeremy Pruitt wants, is Wanya Morris and Darnell Wright to be your tackles, Trey Smith, Cade Mays to be your guards, and Brandon Kennedy. Now, how we get there is a little unique. You know, that entire offensive line room's been hit with quarantine a little bit. There's been guys out for injury, guys out for quarantine. They haven't been full-fledged the entire time. Darnell Wright has been battling at right tackle. The thought was he'd be battling with K'Ron Calvert, and the loser of that position could play guard if Cade Mays is not eligible. Well, K'Ron Calvert's missed some time as well. If the coaching staff is not confident in Darnell Wright for game one and Cade Mays is eligible, you very well could see Cade Mays playing right tackle. That could be a very real possibility, and if that's the case, then you'll see Jerome Carvin step up and play guard. But you know, it's going to be a unique situation. I think this week in practice will be very telling because as of right now, you have all the guys back. And so if you have a good week and you get good progression from Darnell Wright, from Wanya Morris, you might see a little bit more stability. But one thing's for sure, I think you're going to see Jameer Johnson out there playing a lot of football game number one against South Carolina with the hopes of getting Wanya back in the fold on a more consistent basis shortly thereafter for the rest of the season.
656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. If you'd like to join us, *990, a free call for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. 7 days until it's football time in Tennessee as the Vols get ready to take on South Carolina next Saturday night at 7:30. We'll continue to talk about it. Also, it's the second week of the NFL regular season. A lot coming up in hour number two of Saturday Sports Talk on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal.